Hello,
and welcome to Let's Talk Future, the podcast from Oppenheimer, where we explore the trends shaping today's and tomorrow's investment landscape. I'm Matthew Kennedy, head of sales and marketing at Oppenheimer Asset Management. And today, we're talking about private credit, a market that's been growing rapidly and is very much front and center in the financial press. If you picked up the Wall Street Journal or watched CNBC recently, you've probably seen a steady stream of headlines on private credit. With all that attention, we thought this was the right moment to go beyond the headlines and have a deeper, more informed conversation. Joining me is Michael Artisan, President and Chief Operating Officer of Medalist Partners, an alternative investment firm focused on private credit strategies. Before we dive in, just a quick note for our listeners. The views expressed in this conversation are those of our guest and should not be considered investment advice. As always, all investments carry risk and past performance is not indicative of future results. Mike, it's great to have you with us.
Matt, wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Mike, could you briefly walk us through your background? And for listeners who may not be familiar with the firm, could you please give us a high-level overview of what Medalist does and where you focus within the private credit markets?
Sure. As you said, we're a specialist in asset-based finance, both on the liquid securitized credit side, as well as on the asset-based lending side within private credit. The majority of our team worked previously together at Credit Suisse. So we were running the asset finance, specialty finance, and securitized credit businesses within the investment bank. I myself, before Credit Suisse, was also a specialty finance and FIG banker at Morgan Stanley. So we've been in the business for a long time. We've been active in these markets now, some of the team 20, 30, even 40 years. We've seen the evolution of the market really from what used to be a very investment bank, regional bank driven model to much more of the non-bank lending model, which is obviously where this whole private credit evolution has come from. But it's an interesting space to be in for the last 10 to 15 years. And I think it, with the headlines today and the outlook, certainly will continue to be one that's relevant for the foreseeable future.
For our listeners, let's step back and start with the big picture. Mike, how do you define private credit? What's the size of the market today? And really, why has it become so important in the context of client portfolios in recent years?
Yes, great question. So, you know, private credit means many things to different people. For us, we really think about private credit as really any type of lending that's being done from the non-bank community. That could be corporate lending, could be asset-based lending, could be consumer lending, but any lending that's done away from the banks, that's generally how I would think about private credit. The market really started coming out of the financial crisis. And, you know, we lived through it firsthand at Credit Suisse. We saw within the asset finance, specialty finance banking world, the balance sheet we had from Switzerland went from $40 billion down to $6 or $7 billion in the span of just a few years. Part of that for us, and I think for the industry as a whole, was really driven by the regulatory changes.
And is that just a function of their need or the return on investment for the capital they allocate? Is that why what driven that change, the regulation and...
Part of it was regulation. The way these banks operate, the capital charges that were being put on a lot of these private loans became very punitive. And you had to almost start sitting on a dollar of cash for a dollar of every loan you would make. That's just not a business that the banks could be in. So the capital charges became too onerous. The risk appetite dramatically changed when we came out of 2008. I think the risk committees and the credit committees at the banks became very accustomed to saying no rather than yes. And so you did start to see a lot of the more interesting opportunities in the lending world start to happen outside of the banks. And so what was a relatively nascent market, I won't say it was zero in terms of private credit, but it was a relatively de minimis market, has grown today to over a $2 trillion market. So it's grown substantially over the last decade plus. And you've seen all different pockets of the private credit world evolve. So much like I compare us to private equity 25, 30 years ago, what started as leverage buyouts then spanned into infrastructure, healthcare, and all the parts of private equity. I think private credit started very similarly with corporate direct lending really as the first major area of growth. And as that area became a bit more saturated, investors got their core allocations in, you started seeing all these other areas of private credit emerge. Whether, you know, if you look at what we do at Medalist, that's the asset-based lending side. You've seen venture private lending. You've seen all, you know, smaller segments start to pop up. And I think that's good. It's a, you know, sort of natural growth and evolution of the market. But, you know, private credit as an asset class is still relatively new. And I think you'll continue to see a lot of changes and growth in the market. And it's been a relatively benign credit environment since these private credit managers have launched. And so we're getting some headlines recently. We're starting to see some volatility in the space. And this could be really the first significant test that the asset class has faced in the, 10 to 15 years now that it's really been growing.
With yields having been so low for so long, are clients mainly looking for ways to boost income? And how much does diversification factor into that? Could you speak to each?
Sure. No, I think you hit it. You hit the nail on the head. I think a lot of people were looking for ways to find yield in a world where there really was no yield for the better part of 15 years, right? From the financial crisis through 2022, essentially a zero interest rate environment. And so private credit, I think, offers some unique advantages over the public markets, namely higher yield, right? The illiquidity premium within private credit is certainly something that's been very appealing. The lack of volatility, where people looking to avoid constant mark-to-market exposure in the public markets have really embraced what the private markets can offer. And I think that's why today is such an interesting time, because the pendulum has swung far from the left, where people embraced things at cost. We don't want to see constant mark-to-market. To today, all the questions you're seeing in the news around, are these books marked appropriately? Ultimately, I don't think the pendulum will swing all the way to regular mark-to-market for private credit, but I do think you're going to find the pendulum will settle somewhere in the middle, where a lot of these private credit managers are probably taking too long to adjust the valuations in their books. I certainly don't think you should be seeing loans go from 100 to zero in a single quarter. It feels like there's got to be a happy medium. Us as an example, we have a lot of strategies and products that we run in the public markets. I think it's a really part of our DNA is marking things to reality, to what we think they're worth today, whether that's because interest rates have moved, because of underlying credit performance. So I think some managers, and I won't throw everybody in the bucket, some managers have been doing a good job of that. And I think maybe some managers are just catching up. And I think it'll be a good thing for the private credit market overall to see a little bit more focus on, again, settling the pendulum somewhere in the middle on how do the private markets treat valuation over time.
Let's take a moment and address all the market headlines, right? We've seen stories with respect to the public BDCs, the potential liquidity issues, banks, JP Morgan recently mentioning, they may be reassessing their exposure to different parts of the private credit market. From your seat, what do you see as the biggest risks in private credit today?
Sure. We've been talking about this for years, that parts of the market got very crowded. And we all know the big multi-billion dollar firms that have been very, very successful on the fundraising side. What all that capital means is the market for those deals, for those particularly mid to large size corporate direct loans, you've got a lot of capital sloshing around chasing a limited number of good deals. And that's where you tend to see credit suffer. Right? Whether it's underwriting standards getting loose, going more aggressive on loan to value than you otherwise would, your rate is going to get compressed because you've got too many people shopping term sheets around trying to win deals. Nobody wants to lose a good deal. So there's that pressure to put dollars to work. And so I do think in the more crowded parts of the market, you have seen credit underwriting suffer and standards suffer. And eventually that will lead to problems, defaults, potential losses. And the other challenge that goes with some of those big crowded deals, you tend to get more complexity. You've got multiple lenders, there's multiple claims on collateral, there's banks involved, there's private credit funds involved. All of those things lead to more risk in the system, combined with the fact that, again, you've got looser terms, potentially more aggressive LTVs, lower rates that you're getting paid for. All of that tends to lead to more risk. So I think the biggest challenges and the biggest risks you've seen in the private credit market is just crowded trades and loose underwriting in those crowded segments of the market. I don't think anything that we've seen is symptomatic of, broader issues, systemic issues. Some of these funds have leverage lines from the bank. So I think more of the headlines today are around liquidity than they actually are around credit fundamentals. That being said, it's been a benign credit environment. It doesn't surprise me at all that you're going to start to see some credit issues, as well as the fact that those credit issues are coming from some of the bigger, more crowded parts of the market.
And maybe you hit on it there briefly, Mike, with respect to liquidity and the structure of a number of these funds. We've seen a handful of rather large names be in a position where they have to effectively gate, and not be able to allocate capital in their windows of for redemption. Can you maybe speak about liquidity?
You know, the challenge with a lot of these new funds that have come up, you know, whether it's the interval funds, the BDCs, they're offering investors liquidity, albeit limited. Often, you know, it's 5% per quarter. The challenge with that is I don't believe all of the retail investors that come into these funds really understand what that means. And unfortunately, whether it's 2008 or 2020 and COVID, what you find is, you know, liquidity is a funny thing. It's there until everybody wants it, and then it can disappear very quickly. And I think that's part of the problem that you've seen with a lot of these funds over the last 6 months. Again, we haven't even had serious credit issues. We've got headlines around perceived credit issues, right? We've got some, call it three or four high-profile challenges, Tricolor, First Brands. Recently, we just had MFS happen. We've had a lot of discussion around the software companies and what that could mean with AI, you know, making some of these companies obsolete. But just on those headlines, you start to see some of the retail exit, you know, retail investors heading for the exits, and those redemptions will then force other people to head to the exits. I think these headlines are going to be problematic for the interval funds and the BDCs. Even the funds who have good credit portfolios, I think, unfortunately, when the herd gets moving, unfortunately, they all move in the same direction. And once you get limited on how much these funds are going to let you get out, I think that encourages more investors to you know, put in full redemptions because they know they're only going to get part of that out. That tends to put a little bit of a liquidity squeeze on these managers. Some of them are levered. That could cause issues as well. So, you know, look, I think it's less about a credit story to me right now than it is a liquidity squeeze. I don't think it's going to be, again, a systematic problem. I think it's going to take a couple of quarters to work itself out, assuming credit holds up. And if credit holds up, I think this will sort of solve itself for some of the interval funds and BDC funds. I also think it's going to be an interesting opportunity for folks. You'll certainly have managers. You saw the Blue Owl headlines where they sold some loans to meet redemptions. We've already started just from our seats to see some of those portfolio sales come across. So you'll probably see some opportunistic sales. TBD on how distressed those levels get. I think some of that is market dependent as well and credit dependent, but we'll see. It's again, one of the first interesting opportunities of stress we've had in the market. I think the headlines will be here for a couple of quarters around this liquidity squeeze on the open-ended funds. It does feel like the closed-end funds could have a good opportunity to benefit from that over the coming quarters.
That's great. Appreciate that perspective. This stress leads to opportunity, you know, for you and a number of other managers in the space. What are you currently seeing as the most attractive opportunities in private credit?
You know, despite the noise and some of the stress we're talking about, obviously private credit does remain a very attractive asset class today. I think this volatility is actually going to create even more opportunities for folks in the space. If you remember from our view, you know, we look solely at asset-based lending. So unlike some of the more crowded areas of private credit, whether it's middle market, corporate direct lending, everything that we're doing is secured by either hard assets or financial assets as collateral. Within that world, we particularly like the smaller deals, right? Typically between $5 to $50 million in size. That's where you're not competing with some of the bigger players, the KKRs, the Blue Owls, and others. I think it's the high end of the market now that's really very crowded. And that's bringing along with it some of the problems that we were talking about earlier. If you look at the smaller side of things, that's where people can really get in and dictate, I think, higher yields. Today, that's anywhere from 10 to 15% unlevered, along with what you can often get in sometimes equity kickers, profit sharing, other ways of getting upside. And at the same time, you're getting more conservative terms, right? Better covenants, lower LTV, things that you really just can't get in the bigger and more crowded parts of the market. We're seeing good opportunities today really across the areas that we're focused on. So that includes things like commercial real estate, residential real estate, and specialty asset finance, where in the specialty bucket, I'd include things like commercial equipment finance, aviation leasing, auto finance, and even parts of the consumer lending market. If I was to highlight a couple of our favorites right now, I'd say commercial real estate bridge lending is one that's very topical. Historically, that's an area that's been dominated by the community banks and the regional banks. But if you recall, back in 2022 and 2023, a lot of that changed when, think about First Republic, SVB, all of the stress that you started seeing as interest rates rose. You also had a lot of the community banks seeing that legacy commercial real estate loans on their books coming out of COVID. So while those guys have been very busy playing defense and sitting on the sidelines, there's been a really significant opportunity for private lenders to step in the commercial real estate world, particularly in those smaller transactions that we're seeing. So, you know, commercial real estate's a good example of something we've been cautious on over the last few years, particularly coming out of COVID, as you've seen a lot of issues in the space. But you finally started to see a thaw in that market. And by that, I just mean you're starting to see new equity capital flow into the space. You're starting to see transactions happening at prices that reflect, you know, really the reality of today. Oftentimes that's, you know, 25 to 30% lower valuations in some of these deals than you had pre-COVID. So, you know, I certainly wouldn't give all of commercial real estate a blanket endorsement by any means. We still see challenges there in places like office and retail, but there are some really attractive opportunities coming in the short-term bridge lending space. When you think about whether it's multifamily, multi-use, industrial, again, low LTV and low double digits coupon for what we think is very attractive risk. Another area I'd highlight would be residential real estate lending. In that, I'd include things like home equity lending, single family rental, land finance. Land finance in particular is an area that we really like right now, just given some of the shortage in residential housing across the country.
Super helpful, Mike. So before we wrap here, one final question. For investors considering allocating to the private credit market where we are today with all the disruption, what are the two or three most important things they should really focus on?
Sure. You know, I'd reiterate that, first of all, private credit continues to be a very attractive asset class, and I think it'll continue to play an important role in portfolios going forward. The banks have spent the last decade getting out of so many parts of the lending business. There continues to be, and I think will be, a significant need for private lending to step in and fill that void. Some of the specific things I'd highlight, you know, especially given where we are today, you know, it feels like we're late stages in a credit cycle, right? The inflation has been stubborn. Rates have been higher for longer. That puts stress on the consumer. And obviously, we've got geopolitical uncertainty today with a war in the Middle East and oil prices rising. Given those things, I would certainly say it's time to take a more defensive approach as you think about private credit and the subsectors in it. As we talked about earlier, you know, obviously, we're biased at Medalist, but, you know, we favor asset-based lending. I think the defensive positioning of the space, the current cash flow, the hardened financial asset, collateral, all of those things make it a very good place to be if we do head into an economic downturn. When you look at fund structures, we manage only closed-end fund structures at Medalist. We don't have to worry about redemptions. There's no liquidity mismatch between the underlying loans and the structure of our funds. Certainly for the time being, given the retail outflows that we're seeing in some of these semi-liquid interval funds or BDCs, I would be very cautious about investing in any of those structures. I think we're actually going to see some good distressed opportunities in closed-end fund managers who can look at, you know, buying some of those loans out of the liquidity squeeze that you're seeing in these funds. I would put a strong emphasis on investing with managers who are, again, avoiding the crowds. And I think that's a good rule of thumb in any investment asset class, but we're certainly seeing the best risk-adjusted returns in some of the smaller, less crowded segments of the market. A lot of the big blow-ups we've seen that we talked about earlier, I think those were really good examples of what happens when credit standards loosen, when markets get crowded, and you've got too many folks chasing deals. And lastly, I would encourage investors to look for managers who are experienced. And they've got teams with unique sourcing, credit expertise, and they've been through multiple market cycles. They can navigate stress in the portfolio. And on that point, no matter how good you are, when you're in credit, you're inevitably going to run into some problems. And you want a team that's hopefully done it, they've been there before, and they know how to work their way out of those things that inevitably will come up.
Mike, that's fantastic. We've covered a lot of ground here today across the private credit markets. As we wrap, I want to give you an opportunity just for a closing comment if you'd like to share with our listeners, sir.
No, Matt, thank you as always. Appreciate the time. I think as we talked about, it's a very interesting time for private credit. Certainly feels like the first volatile period that the market has seen since it's grown to this $2 trillion asset class. I think the credit side of the story is still performing quite well. I believe that will in large part continue. I think the liquidity side of this market for some of the newer products will continue to be tested. But as a whole, I think private credit has certainly established itself as a key part of portfolios. And I think you'll continue to see that grow in importance and significance as the market matures.
Excellent, Mike. I want to thank you for joining us this afternoon. Thanks for sharing your insight across the private credit market. And I want to thank all of our listeners for joining us on Let's Talk Future.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Mike.